Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Leroux, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. This is going to be a solo episode for the reason being that this wasn't really the type of game that I need to rope somebody else in to be a guest, because it is kind of a different one in terms of takeaways, considering the Dallas Mavericks largely played their B squad out there. They sat three starters, two Dirk Nowitzki and Deron Williams due to injury, the third Andrew Bogut, former Warrior Andrew Bogut, due to rest. And so the whole game had an unusual feel because of something that I've focused on for a long time and doing a series of pieces for The Athletic, which is the concept of rest and rest advantage and everything else like that. The Mavericks had played the night before in Los Angeles. They had beaten the Lakers, and so they were coming up and, you know, facing a talented Warriors team and wanting to make sure that they were preserving everything else. So they kind of threw in the towel from the beginning of the game, and that is an advantage the Warriors will get from time to time. Sometimes it will be at the start, and on other occasions it will be a team kind of folding earlier than you would expect otherwise, and that happens a lot on the tail end of back-to-backs, which this game was, and especially at Oracle, because the Warriors have historically had such a big advantage there. They did lose one game, as you know, earlier this season, but that's one storyline of this game, and in many ways you could argue it's the biggest in terms of the actual result of the game. You know, basically as soon as the starting lineups were announced, it felt very, very likely that the Warriors were going to win the game. But the other really big takeaway is the return of Klay Thompson shot. And while it really only came in one quarter because he was just ridiculous in that first quarter, that was enough to probably make a lot of people feel more comfortable. So in that first quarter, Klay was 7 of 8 from the field, 4 of 5 from 3, 18 points. He actually outscored the Mavericks by himself. And the numbers don't really do it justice, because the biggest difference between today and some of Klay's other games is really that the shots went in. The confidence and the shots that he took were not substantially different from the ones that he had attempted over their last few games. Before that, it got a little bit shakier, but during that stretch in particular, you know, they were clean looks, just like they were before, and he had his feet set and everything like that. They just went in today. And something that was notable about this game was that Coach Kerr went away from the normal rotation and actually swapped Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson's rest in the first quarter because Thompson was playing so well. And you were afforded a little more flexibility because the Mavericks are playing their B squad and because, you know, it's a game that you expect to win and everything like that. But Kerr deserves a lot of credit for actually doing that and going through with it. And that will be a way that the Warriors can try out some different combinations, is just by changing up the rest due to quality. I mean, you think of it more in terms of experimentation and the idea being, oh, you know, well, might as well just try out X player in X role. But it can really be due to quality. It can be a guy's hot, you don't want to take him out. All these players on the Warriors, especially in the starting lineup, are used to playing heavy minutes, so you can do that. You know, you can play them a whole quarter like Klay Thompson did here, and they should be fine with that. Klay has done that in the playoffs. You know, you get into that moment, and I'm sure he appreciated getting it considering the 18 points and everything else like that. And the rest of the time, you know, Klay struggled a little bit. One of the challenges when you start out a game so strong is that you get a lot of confidence in your shot. You get a lot of confidence in it, and he started rushing it a little bit, particularly, I think it was at the beginning of the third quarter. He was just forcing it a little bit, and the shots weren't as good. They weren't as clean. They weren't in terms of the quality of the look itself and his footwork and everything else like that. And that sometimes leads to misses. And so he started out super strong, ended the game with 20 points, but it did end up being a big issue. He was a part of the team's success outside of that anyway. He did have 4 assists, which is higher than usual for him. And Thompson just showing that capability, even if it was only for a quarter, is significant for the Warriors, because you you think about just those great stretches that they've had against the Blazers, against even I was thinking about the Clippers in the preseason, but you just all those kind of things. And it's like, other than the preseason ones, Klay hasn't really been involved in. So you think about just where the ceiling on this team is. It involves all of these players doing well together. And lost in the shuffle of Klay's big quarter was Draymond Green taking and making threes. Overall, he was 4 of 6 from long distance. And in the first quarter, he was 2 of 3. So that was exactly half of that sample. And I think part of it was opportunity. You know, they were early, especially early on in the game, they were leaving him a little bit due to help defense on everyone else. Klay was doing well. Durant was doing well. And another part of it is just that he has the confidence to take and make those shots. And it's important in some ways that he'd be willing to take them. And it's important in other ways that he'd be willing to make them. There is a value to shooting, even if the shot doesn't always go in, because players feel that they have to come out and defend you, unless you're so heinous that isn't really a negative. And so you can think about some examples of that. But overall, Draymond has not reached that level. So his willingness to shoot is an important thing. And so you can take something away from that. Like usual, he had a solid all-around game, 10 rebounds, 4 assists. And the other big thing Draymond did in this game was play really strong defense on Harrison Barnes. It is not surprising, considering all of their time together, that Draymond in particular would do a really good job on Barnes, because Harrison, people think about it a lot because he was good as a stretch four, that his advantage is, you know, having quickness. But what Draymond can do, partially because he has really good feet and because he's really strong, is that he can play defense without yielding any space. And a big difference between the way that Draymond defended Barnes and the way that Klay defended Barnes is that Klay gave him a little bit more room, and Barnes has gotten better off the dribble. It's definitely an improvement, deserves a lot of credit for that. But also, he can use space in a couple of different ways. You know, he can use that to take a jab step and then do kind of a fadeaway. He can also use that to try to get Klay to come back into the play and draw a foul. That happened twice in the game. Klay was not pleased about it. And Draymond just never creates that space, so Barnes can't use it. And it would be fascinating to see something that Mark Jackson kind of fiddled with early on, and granted, I think that was misguided, but the idea of using Draymond as a true perimeter defender. It is not the pinnacle of his value. It's more an intellectual exercise that I want to see it, but he did a great job in this, and Barnes largely played him as a straight three. I mean, he was trying to take him off the dribble, trying to do things like that, not really posting up, and not even really, because Dallas had so few of their key players, Barnes had to be a more high usage guy. He couldn't stand in the corner like he did so much for the Warriors, and that changes his game. You know, he struggled a little bit just because the Warriors were good at defending him. The other guy who did a nice job is Andre Iguodala. Not surprising, knows players' tendencies so well, and there's no better way to know that than to play against the guy in practice all the time and to watch every second they play in games. So both those guys did a really nice job on Barnes. I also want to mention, just because it felt important, that both Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut got very warm receptions, both in the introductions and after a video montage at the first stoppage in the game. And it was nice that Bogut was included in the player introductions despite not playing. He was a scheduled DNP. I mean, he did dress. He was active. I'm not actually sure if he dressed, because he never really saw it underneath everything else. But a warm reception, you should always expect that for players who were integral parts of a championship team and so much other success they had. But, you know, there was a little animosity towards Barnes at various moments, though that was more on Twitter than it was, you know, in terms of the fan base, the season ticket holders, let's say. That was something Jared Dubin and I talked about preseason, about the kind of the Barnes animosity. But it was a game that, you know, it showed Barnes's growth, but also showed, you know, that a lot of that stuff couldn't have happened with the Warriors because they didn't need him to be that. And even if they hadn't gotten Durant, Barnes wouldn't have had the role that he has in Dallas on the Warriors. And, you know, it could end up being a good thing for him. It's a very different kind of game, and the expectations, especially in a contest like this, when you're missing a lot of your key creators, are very different. But he's doing a solid enough job, and certainly happy for him. And, you know, Bogut missed this game just because, you know, he called it a DNPCD, meaning coach's decision. But, you know, it's just tail end of a back-to-back and everything like that. The other interesting dynamic in the early part of the game was Stephen Curry only taking one shot in the early going. A lot of that was just opportunity. You know, Klay was open, Durant was open, Draymond Green was open. So he was passing up those shots, and also he got a shorter first period stint than he usually does because he swapped rest with Clay. But, you know, having the player who just broke the NBA record for three-pointers in a game only attempt one shot, it was a three in that first quarter, was notable in and of itself. The other big thing in the first half of this game, and there wasn't a lot of big stuff in the second half, was a return to the dynamic that we saw before the injury, which was Patrick McCaw being the two guard off the bench for this team. So McCaw ended up playing 20 minutes in the game, but it most notably in the first three quarters, which is, you know, it's hard to say the competitive portion of a game like this, but in those first three quarters, he played 11 minutes and 22 seconds. Ian Clark played 3 minutes and 39 seconds. So it was pretty clear which way Coach Kerr wanted to go with that. I do not expect that it was due to the back-to-back or anything like that, especially considering Andre Iguodala did not play in the second half. So there was plenty of time for Ian Clark to get minutes if they really, really wanted to. He got a little less than four during that time, despite Iguodala not playing at all in the third quarter, which is when Clark played. And for those of you that will remember, I believe it was against the Suns, but it was the game where McCaw got hurt. Actually, I think it was New Orleans. McCaw had played, I think it was about 10 to 12 minutes in that game, and Ian Clark had not been in. And then McCaw got hurt on one of the last plays of the first half, and then Clark basically replaced him in the second half of that game. And that is notable because earlier, and I mean, I think it was pretty public, that Kerr had Clark over McCaw in the beginning of the season, regular season rotation, and McCaw took it from him for a couple of different reasons. One of them is just that he's so much more consistent defensively. Clark did have that really solid performance against Damian Lillard in the third quarter of the game at the Moda Center in Portland, but generally speaking, McCaw is better defensively. He can play the passing lanes, he can switch more. There was one play that I really liked McCaw's recognition. It was in the third quarter. Dallas got an offensive rebound, kind of an awkward offensive rebound, and Curry had gone in to get the defensive board, as he does sometimes. And so the ball went out to Seth Curry, and McCaw was just there. He was there. He moved over from his guy and knew that that was the biggest threat. And then when Steph got back, McCaw went over to his guy. So they were able to kind of cover the whole thing at once. Part of the reason for that was, I believe it was Dorian Finney-Smith that McCaw was on, not the most dangerous shooter in the world, especially in a game like tonight. But that is good recognition. That's the type of thing that you want to see from any player, much less a rookie. And I was thinking about that just in the overall course of the game, is that McCaw and Kevon Looney are fascinating for the Warriors long term because they do different things than anybody else on the roster. So McCaw plays the passing lanes. He can shoot when he has to. I like him better as a creator in more benchy lineups than I do with the starters, just because you have other guys who are better at that than he is. But he can be a cog in that machine. And Kevon Looney's kind of the same way. He has good hands. He didn't get any rebounds in this game, but he did get fouled on one. Like, it's one of those plays where you don't get credit for the offensive rebound, but you drew a defensive foul on the loose ball. So he did get that. And something that I believe was Tim Kawakami brought up on Twitter, which was a great point, is that Looney's hands matter because the team is doing feel comfortable putting the ball in his hands. So when he's rolling to the basket, they can give him the ball and things like that. And so he fills a different role offensively than anybody on this team. And I kind of thought, I've been working through this for the player reviews for The Athletic, that in some ways he's kind of an amalgamation of parts of Bogut's game and parts of Azili's game, because he has Festus Azili's drive to get offensive rebounds, which was really the best thing that Festus did offensively for the Warriors. But he has Bogut's kind of steady hands and like reluctance to make mistakes offensively. Like, that was kind of one of the trademarks of Festus. And then defensively, he's not near the level of those guys. And that is a limitation, let's say, moving forward. And I'm interested in seeing how the Warriors use Looney at various moments moving forward. And one of the combinations that I personally would really like to see is Looney playing with David West, because we saw West in this game do a nice job contesting shots, mostly deep twos and threes. He was being active out there and he's getting more comfortable in the offense, had a couple of assists tonight, actually had three, had some rebounds. And that is such an important thing that he can do. If you can give West a little bit more comfort and play power forward. And so you're kind of giving both of those players a little bit of a hybrid thing. You can switch their defensive assignments based on who the matchups are, you know, who's a better kind of guy for each one of them to take. But that is something I would love to see the Warriors do in some of those lineups. And that also would theoretically allow them to rest Durant and Green at the same time, whether that be kind of to set up the fourth quarter run, like maybe you use West and Looney together at the start of the fourth. that might be a way to do it, or some other things, some other ways that you can try it, especially when the Warriors start going to the death lineup more often. And that could be, you know, that could be maybe part of your playoff bench rotation, could be something involving those two guys, or maybe you include Durant. But anyway, there are a lot of different combinations that this team should try over the course of the season. And something else that was really fun and notable about this game, and I'm a little bit surprised it took me about 15 minutes to get there, is how much Seth Curry knows about his brother and his passing habits, because Seth had 5 steals in this game, and I think 4 of them were basically just him knowing exactly what his brother was going to do. And those of us who, you know, played against the same kids growing up, I do not have a brother, but who played against other kids growing up, you learn their tendencies, you learn what they want to do. And I'm sure Seth also watches a lot of film. He was at a lot of the Warriors playoff games, especially when he was building a basketball career for himself. And there were some of it, like there was a lead pass Curry threw to Draymond that Seth just basically stole. There was another one where it was just like he was looking in a certain direction. Seth knew exactly where the ball was going to go. There was one on a dribble move too, I believe. And, you know, that's kind of a different challenge. I mentioned on Twitter during the game that it feels like a playoff team could invest in Seth just for the sole virtue of frustrating his brother. And, you know, when somebody is as good as Steph Curry is, it actually does make some sense. And it's great for Dallas that they got him for so cheap. This was also just a good game for Seth Curry because he looked like he belonged largely out there. And when a player is primarily a backup, when you can do that, it's more than enough. I think about somebody like Jonathan Simmons, who has largely done that at the bare minimum. He's done more than Seth Curry, but the idea of being like, if you show you belong, then that means you can be well suited for even a smaller role. And so it was an unusual game exactly for that reason too. I mean, I think that's also part of the reason why Steph Curry came back in after he tweaked his ankle. That's the term they're using. In the third quarter, he came back. I'm guessing part of it was that he had extra juice because his brother was in. Another part of it was just that the Warriors weren't playing very well. And so they ended up bringing Curry back in. I am openly unsure as to whether Steph will play against Denver. It's a back-to-back. It's tough travel. Tweaked his ankle. The Warriors are, as always in this kind of situation, they're abundantly cautious, and they should be, especially considering they then have a couple days off and play against the Suns. So you can kind of balance that out, give it a little bit more. And considering their overall situation, the other thing the Warriors could do, and I know Steph hates this, I think he's talked about it before, but they can also play it by ear a little bit and just kind of, you know, maybe you don't use him as a starter, but you can break glass in case of emergency. But I also understand why you don't really want to do that with him, because special player wants to be on the floor, everything else like that. So we'll really see how that works out over time. And I asked Coach Kerr after the game, one of the things that was happening was why Andre Iguodala didn't play in the second half. There was kind of, whenever a player doesn't do that, the expectation is that, you know, that there's some sort of plan involved, but you never know if there was some sort of injury. So I asked Coach Kerr, and here's what he said. Was Andre Iguodala not playing in the second half, was that kind of because of the game tomorrow? Or is there
something else? Yeah, that was because of the game tomorrow. So I talked to him at halftime, and we agreed that he'd take the rest of the half off to keep him fresh for tomorrow. I was hoping we could give guys, the fourth quarter off, but we really butchered that third quarter, and Dallas played really well, and so we had to keep going and keep playing.
And his point about wanting to rest the other guys is particularly well taken, because they need rest from everybody. And I'm sure that Kerr in particular wanted those other players to get more rest. They're playing the Nuggets. He said after the game that his expectation is to play everyone in Thursday's contest. I am, again, openly dubious about that. But you want to get every win that you can get. You want to give yourself a good chance at it. And having to bring those guys back in, not only in the third quarter for extended periods, but then in the fourth quarter, is something that's concerning. And it wasn't, I mean, there's a different kind of thing when a coach doesn't have faith in his bench, and you know, that'll happen. But this was more just the starters giving it up. It wasn't that they went to the bench and the bench blew it. I mean, the starters were the ones who largely seeded it. It is also worth noting that Sean Livingston was out there instead of Steph, but considering how good this team is, it should be a little bit more than that. And so Durant got about 7 minutes, Draymond 5, Clay and Steph 4 in that fourth quarter when the game should have been long over. I think they were up about 30 at halftime. So that's something to watch. It was a similar thing that happened in the New Orleans game and opened the door for Curry to break the three-pointers record. record, but the Warriors need to make sure that they give those players as much of an opportunity to rest as possible. And an unconventional idea that very, very, very few teams consider, but they probably should, is the idea of when a team has a big lead at the end of the second quarter, and Kerr talked about that part of it, the other team's going to come out hot, is starting with your backups. And the reason why you start with your backups is that you can kind of build an inverse rotation during that time. So if you start with your backups, then if you need to, you can bring in the starters for a short stint and, you know, a couple minutes, keep them fresh, all that sort of thing. And then assuming the game is out of hand, you've then given your backups enough rest time so that they can play the whole fourth quarter. Maybe you get into your super subs at that point, like the Warriors using the Looney, McAdoo, and JaVale McGee lineup in that stretch, and so you can go even further, maybe take Livingston out like they did with McCaw and Clark, having those guys in instead. So you can kind of go in that dynamic, and I would expect that the Warriors will not do that, but it would be an interesting tact, not only as a challenge to those players, but as an approach to making sure that you give guys the right amount of rest. And that the trap is, and this is what happens sometimes, when you play the starters at the beginning of that quarter and they knock the game out, you don't necessarily want to keep your backups in the whole time. And since the NBA only allows for 13 guys to be active, even if everyone's healthy, you don't really have enough to cycle them out. And so there were times where Kerr has used Livingston or various other players. I think Iguodala has done this a little bit in a spurt where you just want to have bench guys out there. You want to have garbage time guys out there. And so that is, you know, that is a little bit of a concern. And I kind of have to see how that works out. But it is a good problem to have, you know, when you're up 30 at halftime, it is a good problem to have. I'm not going to say anything other than that. But, you know, it's something to consider as we move forward, because the Warriors, in terms of the coaching staff, the players, and everyone, fans, everyone else, they hope that they're going to have a lot of blowouts. So minute management will be important. So it's something that I will watch the rest of the season and I will share in this space. But really, that's enough of a takeaway for this game. It was really kind of that, it wasn't an anomaly, except that it was so far this year. I think it will happen a lot more as the season moves forward, especially when the Warriors face more teams that are at Oracle on a back-to-back. And it's a little perk of being as good as they are, is that you can get, sometimes you don't get a team's best shot, even though it feels like you will every night. So we'll see how that happens moving forward. For those of you who want to, you can read my material at The Athletic. I'm doing my standard two pieces, player analysis, game analysis. I'm not exactly sure when they go up. One of them hopefully will be up by the time most of you listen to this. The second one usually comes out during the day. I try to have it done by 10 a.m., but then, as many of you know, the editing process can take some time. You can also check out the Dunked On Basketball podcast I do. You can check out Sporting News and everything else I'm working on. I also just recorded a Real GM Radio episode with Ben Golliver of Sports Illustrated. That will come out later in the week. I will promo that a little bit more clearly, but there is some Warriors conversation that. And Nate and I actually talked about, I just remembered this, we talked a little bit about the Warriors at the very end of our Time to Panic episode, which was the new one, just about the idea of this team and everything else. So if you want to send any feedback, good, bad, and different, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux on Twitter, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. I read everything, respond to what I can. You can follow the show, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com if you really like to. You can also support the show, download every episode, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review, and also, if you want to check out SeatGeek, you can use the promo code LOWarriors on that. Thank you so much for taking the time. Of course, we'll have a new episode after Warriors Nuggets tomorrow night. That will be the last episode of this week. Don't know if it's going to be with guests or not. Depends on my personal timing. Have some stuff going on tomorrow. Of course, we'll watch the game. So not exactly sure how that's going to work out, but rest assured there will be a Locked On Warriors. So thank you again for listening. Take care and make it a great day.